Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, everybody, welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi going to be on one side of your screen, myself, Stormy Bonantoni, on the other. Big show, lots of NFL news and notes to get to. The NBA is tipping off later tonight, so we're lucky to have our all-sport GM, Will Hill, join the show later on this hour, also in hour two.
Of course, yes.
Of course, right? So we'll also get into some college football a little bit later. We got some futures, a look ahead to week nine this weekend with Aaron Moore, who will join us. But Michael, your article that you wrote today, which we'll talk about more later on in the show, but I love that on a day that we're talking all things NFL, the trade deadline approaching and all the things, you opened up your article with a reference to the 76ers and how hard that fandom has been for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, it starts the season off the right way. I love how the season started and Bradley Beal's got a little back spasm. They're going to rest him. He's not going to play. I mean, it's like, okay, great. I mean, why start the season in October if nobody's going to play? We'll see. But, yeah, I it kind of was a way to start the column. I wanted people to realize that, A, I am a fan of some sport, of a fan. I'm not this cynical way. They made me this cynical way. I was normally a happy person. And two, you know, I mean, all these teams, they want to tank. And everybody draws a comparison between football and in the NBA, and they're worlds apart, right? And NFL teams don't have to tank. It's self-instituted into the program. When you don't have a starting quarterback and you're playing backups, you're tanking.
Yep. Like I said, I'm excited to get into that conversation later. Where we will start the show, though, is our Monday Night Football autopsy. And I use that word not because the San Francisco 49ers Super Bowl hopes are dead or anything like that, but because of how lifeless they looked at the end of the game when you have two opportunities, game on the line, and your quarterback, who hadn't thrown multiple interceptions in a game in his career to this point, throws two in the fourth quarter when you can't have it, when you need a response with the game on the line, Michael.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, they had their chances. I think what you have to understand is every great team in this league is not elite in terms of they're not going to be vulnerable. And when the Niners don't play from in front, okay, the 49ers have failed with Kyle Shanahan. When they trail by 8 points or more into the fourth quarter, they've lost 37 straight games. Why is that? I've said it numerous times on the program. I've said it on my pod. Their whole system is predicated on play action pass, running the football. Last night, if you take out the Purdy run of 17 yards, they had 21 carries for 48 yards in the game. That's not how you win again. That's not how Kyle Shanahan can call a good game. And so all the attention gets focused on Purdy's interceptions. And obviously, he didn't make the plays when they needed him to make them. Last week, he did. The kicker didn't make it. Mm-hmm. But I think what we see is vulnerability in San Francisco when they don't play from in front, when they don't have that lead, when they can't just continue to run the football and balance their attack. And their defense, you know, is somewhat vulnerable. I mean, Minnesota punted one time in the game. They controlled the ball for pretty much all the game. I mean, they had the ball, I think, like 35 minutes. Basically, they had the ball the whole time. So I think that's two. Second, I got to ask you, as a 49er fan, I've seen a lot of bad calls offensively. We don't talk bad calls defensively. But I think the zero blitz call at the end of the half might be one of the worst calls I've seen since Greg Williams went zero blitz against, I forget who it was, they threw the touchdown pass to beat the Jets. I mean, just you're not knowing the situation. Minnesota had no more timeouts. You don't need to blitz them there. You could rush two. They were, if they throw the ball in bounds, they were never going to have enough time to kick the field goal. And yet you give up seven at that situation, and essentially it cost you the game. What I find fascinating, Stormy, is, and you're a 49er fan, you know, they talk glowingly about the 49ers, and rightly so. But this is a seven-year project. Kyle's been coaching for 105 games. He's only 9 games over 500. Like, they've had their bumps in the road that no one seems to remember.
Yeah, I mean, they've been good in recent history, right? And so I think that kind of overshadows the team that he had to take over, which was not good, had highs and lows, especially when it comes to, injuries for the San Francisco 49ers that have derailed what looked like they could be good seasons. And so I look at the window of the 49ers as pretty narrow right now because of all of the talent that they have, how much some of these contracts are going to cost here in the near future. With Brock Purdy still on the deal that he is for, you know, the next two seasons, I kind of think that's the window of opportunity for the San Francisco 49ers to really get over the hump and win a Super Bowl. So you hope that things can come together and that injuries aren't going to cause a big enough problem this year. But now we look where they're at, dropping back-to-back games. And you talk about this team not being able to have success playing from behind. Fred Warner talked about that post-game yesterday. He said that they need to find a way to win those grimy games, right? He said, obviously we can win 30-10, but who are we and what are we going to do when we're down and we've got to come back and win a game? And we haven't seen them in a situation where they've been able to do that yet. Kirk Cousins, to your point about the defense, throws for 378 yards, the fourth most against a Kyle Shanahan coach team, period. And so they got to figure some things out here moving forward, and they've got to do it fast because they have a Cincinnati Bengals team that's coming off a bye this coming week that they have to take on, and a challenging schedule the rest of the way.
Right. And look, the two things didn't happen last night. They made a huge coaching blunder at the end of the half. Okay. So they give up seven there. They have no business giving up seven there. And if they would have been able
to... Ward still
should
have gotten that interception. He still had his hands on the football.
Exactly. As bad as the call is, he was in position to make the play, right? And so as bad as they played in the game, allowing Kirk Cousins to have one of his finest days ever national television, you know, to do that, they still had every opportunity to win the game, and their defense was effective. I thought Kevin O'Connell's play calling was great. I thought he understood how to attack the 49ers defense, how to handle the situations, how to expect it, how to stay out of third down, not let that pass rush really get going. They had no sacks in the game. They only had five tackles for losses, and they only got their hands on five footballs. And two of them almost were interceptions. One was an interception, and one almost was. So, I mean, there's a lot there that you can get angry about, but there's also a lot to say they're going to get better. And they get a Cincinnati team. Orlando Brown's says he's going to play. He's not 100% healthy. We'll see. I think this 49er front, when they play from in front, all of a sudden it becomes a different team to block.
Yeah, with Kirk Cousins, too, just because you mentioned the national stage for him, I think it's probably time that we kind of put to bed that primetime narrative a little bit. Yes, I know Monday Night Football, he now improves to 3-12, and it's bad. But also, at home in primetime with Minnesota, he's 6-3. The last couple of games, he's had solid performances, so leave the guy alone. Also, have a day, Jordan Addison. First-round rookie wide receiver, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns on 7 catches. Obviously, the play that we just referenced that was awful for the 49ers side of things, a great play for the young rookie. And now, Michael, as we kind of think about Minnesota big picture moving forward, are they a playoff team now? You can bet them 2-1 to make the playoffs this year. This is a team that was 1-4 not too long ago, and everybody's talking about, hey, the trade deadline's coming up. Let's ship off assets, get Kirk Cousins out of here because you're going to start the rebuild now, myself included saying this. They beat the Bears. You still think, oh, who cares? You couldn't move the football. But now you beat the San Francisco 49ers, and you're showing progress, a legit performance. You're 3-4. The schedule ahead feels like there's a lot of potential opportunity. You go twice against Green Bay, Atlanta, New Orleans, Denver, Chicago, Vegas. Tough games at Cincinnati and home versus the Lions, but you're going to get Justin Jefferson back if Jordan Addison keeps playing like this. If TJ Hawkinson continues to be a good security blanket for Kirk Cousins, why couldn't they make the playoffs?
Well, they could easily make the playoffs. All they have to do is stop the red zone turnovers. We said that earlier in the year. For all the luck they had last year, they've had no luck this year. I mean, they've turned the ball over in every single game, Now, in the last 2 weeks, their defense has created six turnovers, which is why they've won, because they've given the ball away the last 3 weeks just one time. But when they're able to not turn the ball over in the red zone, I mean, look, they've got Kansas City, got a chance to tie that game in late in the game. I mean, the Charger game, they could have easily won, but they turn it over in the red zone. So I kind of think, to me, they can. Because right now, when I looked at it and wrote my column this morning, your Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the 7th seed as a wild card.
Yeah.
That's not going to last.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to last. I mean, somebody's got to get in. There's got to be 7 teams from the north. And when we were all working on the football guide this summer, you know, I kept thinking, well, maybe Detroit won't make it. And I kept saying to myself, well, how do you keep them out? Like, what good team can get in there? And I think that's the argument for Minnesota. They certainly have the ability to win in Green Bay. They have the ability to win in Atlanta. They can win at home against New Orleans. They can go to Denver and win, and they can win at home against – I mean, they can potentially win the next five games. They could also lose three of the next five games too. So I think it's all about, can they protect the football? But the way Cousins is playing – and the way they're maneuvering around the no-run game that they really don't have, I think they do miss Cook. They can't really run the football. I think it's helped them. And look, they're 32nd in rushing attempts. I think O'Connell realizes that every time I call a run, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, the turnovers, though, to your point, have been a big problem for Minnesota. Only two teams in the entire league have more than their 14 at this point. But Cousins lead in the NFL right now with 16 touchdown passes. His 2,057 yards are just about 30 less than Tua Tagovailoa, who leads the league in that statistic. And they're in that eighth spot in the NFC right now. So they're just staring at that wild card. And I trust them more than I trust the third team in the NFC East and the third team in the NFC West and even the second team in the NFC South, right? So, like, I feel like the opportunity is there. So maybe this is a good 2-1 number. Grab the Vikings while you can at a plus money number to have them make the postseason. The Vikings are taking on the Packers this coming week as a 1-point dog. Oh, did that change? That might have changed. 1-point dog, what I see right now, 42.5 the total. 49ers laying 5.5 against Cincinnati when they return to action this coming weekend. Total 46. We've got the trade deadline coming up a week from today. One trade was made yesterday. We'll discuss when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can check the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well to view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up now and get access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120 at VSiN.com/subscribe. And you need to do it because, like we talked about yesterday, Michael Lombardi has been on a heater the last couple of weeks. Perfect this past weekend with your NFL official plays on the Sunday show, Michael. So that picks page is getting more and more important by the day.
Yeah, I hope I keep it going. I got a good one last night from Russo, you know, so he took San Francisco. So now he's, you know, one game behind me and I continue to get the T-box. He loves saying, oh, you got the T-box to go first. Like it really matters. So, you know, when he lost last night, I didn't send him, I got the T-box again today, but we'll see. He'll be on his rampage tomorrow.
Well,
so once we get that handled, we'll go from there.
See, Michael, he should have been listening to the show because albeit kind of jokingly yesterday, we were talking so much about how the public just got crushed this past week. And every time you saw a betting split where 70-80% of the money and handle was on one side, the other side ended up winning. That's exactly what we had last night with the 49ers and the Vikings who come through as an underdog winning on the money line.
Yep. Okay. So on Friday of last week, I went through it. 85% of the money was on the Browns. 82% of the money was on the Bills. 82% of the money was on the 49ers. 81 on the Bucks. 80 on the Lions. 73 on the Rams. 73 on the Jags. They won. 73 on the Raiders. 73 on the Commanders. 71 on the Packers. What you're looking at right there is a total disaster.
Oof.
Right there. If you bet that, if you were any one of those people in one of those 9 or is it 10 bets right there, I mean, you were 1-9.
Gosh, rough. And on a short slate week too with all the buys, that's brutal, brutal,
1-9. So again, you know, before you turn the ticket in, ask yourself, do I really want to be on the side of the public? Do I really want to be here? Do I really want to be there? I don't think you do. But, you know, I'm not saying you shouldn't because there are some situations out there that, you know, like this morning when I go through the lines, it's like you look at it and you say, okay. Like, for example, I would have thought the Rams would have had more love in this week's line. Okay, I know we got to get to some news and notes here, but it opened at 6. It moved to 5.5. I thought for sure, you know, there would have been a lot more money coming in on the Rams. But so far, you know, so far this week, no one seems to be interested in betting Tampa, Cleveland, the Chiefs, Carolina, the Giants, and Washington. And the Rams are kind of borderline.
Yeah. Well, that again, just I think reinforces the picks page, the betting splits page that we have here at VSiN.com. That much more important just to help you kind of form some opinions as you are looking at the slate each and every week. And as we finish talking about the Monday night football game from last night with the 49ers and Vikings, I wonder if with the trade deadline coming up in a week, if the 49ers might try to go out there and get someone. We just saw the Philadelphia Eagles, who are kind of the number one challenger for supremacy in the NFC, go out and get Kevin Byard yesterday from the Texans in exchange for Terrell Edmonds and picks. And so I just wonder from that standpoint, what you thought about this deal specifically. They go out and get a two-time All-Pro in the back end for Philadelphia, an area of need for them. We know they've had some injuries there. Reed Blankenship's been out the last couple of weeks as well. And on the flip side, a team like the Titans that is officially saying with this move in my mind, okay, we know that we're out this year.
Well, the Titans know that, you know, basically they were not making any plays on the football as it was with Byard in their secondary, right? They've had two interceptions all year. They're one of the lowest teams in the interception. I think they're 31st in the league in creating interceptions. You know, teams throw the ball pretty much at will on them. And remember, this was a player that they went to get a contract negotiation to reduction. And he didn't want to take a reduction. They were going to cut him. They kind of agreed to a redo contract. And I think eventually now that it's happened, it's okay. I probably need to go. With Blankenship being hurt, they need somebody in the back end to kind of get them organized, get them aligned properly, and I think he can do that. Byard's a really good, smart player. Is he the same player he was 4 years ago? No. But he'll certainly help them and give them the experience they need to settle down that back end. Here's the concern you have. I mean, everybody talks about Bradbury playing great. Everybody talking about, like, people can throw the football on this secondary, whether they have Slay, Bradbury, it doesn't matter. The question is you can't get time enough to throw the ball. Their rush is still too good.
Yeah, so great points all around. And I do think that he'll be a welcomed addition, and he's probably got to be stoked. Like, I leave a bad situation in Tennessee. Granted, he's been there for a lot of years. He has roots there. I know he went to Middle Tennessee for college. So, you know, he loves the area, doing great things in the community. But now you leave a bad situation in a team that's going downward fast for an opportunity at a ring, and you're going back to the place where you were born and raised. I think that's pretty cool for Kevin in this spot. But now let's look at the Titans side of this a little bit more. Because obviously they're kind of admitting at this point that they're not going to go to the playoffs this year. Two wins this season. Ryan Tannehill's injured. We see the news from Mike Vrabel this morning that with Tannehill unavailable, he expects both Malik Willis and Will Levis to play this weekend against the Falcons. What was your first reaction when you heard that?
Well, I felt like there's no way he can play Malik Willis. The last time I saw Malik Willis, I was very comfortable knowing that he wasn't going to allow them to get a touchdown because I was on the Colts in that game with Russo, and I didn't need him to cover. I was on the Ravens, excuse me. I didn't need him to get a touchdown to cover, and he didn't. And they kicked the field goal, which was the smart play. I mean, he's got to take a look at these guys. Rand Carthon, the general manager, they draft Levis. They got to take a look at him. I mean, Tannehill's, you know, they didn't redo Tannehill's contract this year or guarantee his base salary because they don't want any acceleration leaving him. They want to get rid of all that. And so they're not going to, you know they need a quarterback of their future, and they better take a look at these two guys before they move forward. I don't think it will be Willis. There's no way you could play a whole game with Willis. I think what Vrabel's doing is some statesmanship, gamesmanship, if you will, because if he says it's Levis, you know, then you don't have to worry about Willis. But if he says it's both, as a defensive coordinator for the Falcons, you better get ready for a lot of quarterback runs, and you better get ready for some dropback passes because he could have both quarterbacks play. And it's probably the smart thing. On some short yardage plays, put Willis out there, make him the running back, and see what Levis can do in terms of situation throwing the football. The problems come into this Tennessee team lacks an offensive line. They struggle there, and they've struggled to protect Tannehill. I mean, that's where Baltimore created so much problems. Everybody has been able to exploit their offensive line, even though they paid over $10 million a year to Andre Dillard at left tackle. He's been an issue. Chris Hubbard's bounced around the league quite a bit. He's their right tackle. Skronsky, they drafted in the first round. We'll see how it goes. I mean, they've already benched Dillard. I mean, they put Petit Ferry in there at left tackle, and we know how he played last year, and it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think of that's the same way I think of the Bengals offense and all the money and things that they've invested from that standpoint, and it just hasn't bore fruit to this point. For Tennessee, what you said about the quarterbacks, I think that makes a lot of sense. If you don't have to show your hands right now, why would you? So just set the table that, hey, either one of these guys could go. We might see them both, whatever. But as the picture as a whole for the Titans, like, could this be a full-blown fire sale moving forward with the trade deadline coming up? Could we see Derrick Henry going somewhere else? D-Hop's only on a two-year deal. Could he get shipped out? Some of these other names be on their way out the door in Tennessee?
I mean, I would think D-Hops would say, like, why don't you just trade me? Like, he signed there, and, you know, I mean, is he going to go through another season where they're going to tear it down? I mean, Henry, as I said to you in the break, you made a great point about Dallas. I mean, if you trade for Henry, you're committing to a run game. And your immediate answer was, maybe Dallas would do that. To give them a little bit of that, you know, that power and flash with Pollard and Henry run the outside zone. That makes sense. I think they'll listen. I definitely think they'll listen. Look, defensively, their secondary is a mess. They've got a lot to fix there. The defensive line is the strength of their team, but when Tart doesn't play, he's been injured. We'll see if he'll play this week. You can actually run the football. They don't have any depth. So they've got the great Jeffrey Simmons, who they just redid his contract. They'll build around him. The one thing we do know with Vrabel, he'll coach. They're not tanking, and that's what I wrote about. They're not going to tank. They're going to compete, but they just don't have enough weapons to really make it happen.
Yeah, he's going to continue to coach hard. The team's going to keep playing hard. They've been known, I feel like, under Mike Vrabel to outplay what they actually have out there on the football field more often than not. So, yeah, completely agree from that standpoint. Again, the Titans are getting 2.5 at home this week against the Falcons. Who we will see more of at quarterback to be determined, but from our standpoint, probably Will Levis more. The total in that game, 36.5. We have so much more news and notes here still to get to around the NFL. Some quarterback updates, which includes the Deshaun Watson saga having yet another wrinkle, which continues to blow my mind. We will be right back here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. All you got to do is download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Use that in the NBA tonight. Reminder, the NBA betting guide available now. It's not too late when you become a VSiN.com subscriber, VSiN Pro Access. That'll also get you access to our college basketball betting guide that's coming out here soon. Our next guest, Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, was a big contributor to that college hoops betting guide. Also, deep dive into college football, been helping us out every single week. Welcome in, Aaron. We were just talking before the break about a lot of the NFL awards markets, and I think with you talking college football, very natural transition to the Heisman conversation, as we have a new favorite in that market as well with JJ McCarthy, as the Michigan Wolverines also happen to be the biggest story in college football right now. Lucky for John Harbaugh that they are on a bye, Jim Harbaugh, excuse me, that they are on a bye this week. But what do you make of JJ being the new favorite? And from a narrative standpoint, could all of this news impair his opportunity to win the award?
Well, Stormy, taking away the whole cheating scandal, let's talk about that in a second. Before that, it just is very surprising that McCarthy, a quarterback of a team that has a very good running back in Blake Corum, he's a Heisman candidate himself, obviously much further down the board in that 90-1 range. But what has McCarthy done to be the Heisman leader other than guide a very dominant team who's played a weak schedule while having some of the other candidates, like Caleb Williams, take a step back. Michael Penix last week didn't have a great game. So what has McCarthy done to be number one on the board? I don't see it. So that's first and foremost, I think, the problem with the Heisman is McCarthy really hasn't been a Heisman candidate. He's just kind of moved up as others have come down. Now let's put in this whole sign-stealing aspect and this idea of you ain't cheating, you ain't trying type of mentality that we know that's happened. And Michael mentioned it earlier. I heard talking about cheating in sports or stealing signs. We know that happens. And what I think is interesting from McCarthy's standpoint is now he's attached to this narrative. It can't help him. There's just no way it can help him. And the other idea that I think it hurts his candidacy and it hurts Harbaugh as well is media members who vote for these awards, they tend to be a little bit of a self-righteous group. Let me talk to you about Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, steroid guys in the Hall of Fame. So these voters for these awards tend to avoid these type of scandals. And I think all of that is really working against McCarthy. So he's a favorite. I don't understand why. And then you add in this cheating scandal. I think from a Heisman standpoint, you have to look elsewhere on the board.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was on Baton Rouge Radio today before our show, and I was making the case for Jaden Daniels. I mean, look, they're the number one offense in the country, the number one scoring relative. I mean, every single number, it goes towards LSU. It's not his fault they gave up 55 to Ole Miss. It's not his fault they gave up 45 to Florida State. Like, I mean, I don't understand where this award has gone to. Well, you have to be the best player on the winning team. Whatever happened to being just the best player, period?
And I think if you look at Jaden Daniels, certainly he's a Heisman candidate that you have to look at. And LSU had their loss a lot earlier in the season. And I think that creates that domino effect that all of a sudden Daniels was just pushed down the board when USC was undefeated and Caleb Williams was there. So I don't necessarily know, Michael, if the odds board is a reflection of how people are going to vote. Now, we still have four or five more games to go. There's still going to be more wins and losses. But the odds board at this standpoint just doesn't line up with how people are going to vote. Now, if LSU can beat Alabama, all of a sudden, I think you're going to see Daniels go back to the top of the board. Hell, Michael Penix hasn't lost a game yet, and he took a step back. So I do think it's still a couple more weeks for these things to get situated. But if you're looking at it just from an objective standpoint of the Heisman odds board, I don't think it's a reflection of how people are going to vote in 3 or 4 weeks from now. Daniels, as you said, he's certainly live. He's doing at LSU what Joe Burrow did just a few years ago.
Yeah, and with that defense being so bad, it helps him pump up the numbers that much more, too, if he can overcome and start winning some of these games down the stretch. Here with Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, sports media professor. We're also 1 week out from the college football playoff selection committee coming out with their first set of official rankings. I wonder, as we're talking about voters and the human element as they go ahead and make their selections for the Heisman, it's also humans that are getting in a room and deciding who's going to go where on a team-by-team basis with those selection committee rankings. How different do you anticipate them being from what we've seen in the AP poll with people making those decisions?
I think it's, once again, Stormy, if we're talking about just betting, right, there is humans, there are subjectivity going on here. And as I always say when I talk about futures, particularly awards, you can't bet on what you think should happen. You have to look at what humans are going to vote on. I think it might be a little bit different. And if you look at it this way, you've got six teams for four spots, right? Those six teams that are undefeated. So you have to look at it. Who's going to get the first crack of not being in that top four? And I think that's where it looks at from a handicapping standpoint. So if we start at the top, you have Georgia and Michigan. It's depending on who's one or two. I think that can go either way. And it's one of the criticisms people have of college football. Those teams that are in the pole position early on that get that number one ranking before the season even starts, well, that matters. It might not be fair, but it matters. And Georgia and Michigan at times this year maybe haven't looked like a national championship team, but they haven't lost. So they're still going to be 1-2. And then we have to look who else fits in there. And at this point, Florida State, I think, deserves the number three spot because of that win against LSU. They beat Clemson. I understand it's not the Clemson we thought they would be. Duke has certainly taken a step back. But you've got those wins there. And then you've got the Ohio State presence of two Big Ten teams, and Ohio State has Notre Dame win, Penn State, Maryland. Those are all good wins. So I think you have those four teams in there. 1-2 could flip-flop, 3-4 could flip-flop. But then who gets shut out of these first rankings? And I think it's Washington and Oklahoma. And it's tough for Washington that they're going to be outside on this first four, because if we look at it, where Washington fits in, they still have four tough games remaining. So even if Washington is in that top four, I can't really see them staying there because they have four top games. Of this six teams, the other one being Oklahoma, which I see as number six, they have the hardest schedule. So if I'm wrong with those first four and Washington is in there, I don't see them staying in there after these four games that they have coming up over the next month.
Yeah, they do have a tough schedule because, you know, let's face it, the Pac-12 for it dissolving is still pretty good. Tennessee has the lead, playing well. Then the second half, Nick Saban makes adjustments and they can't do anything. You like them to continue that trend with taking Kentucky and the points this week?
Yeah, you know what, Michael? We talk about handicapping and we really obviously focus on numbers. But I'm going to go on the eye test. In watching that Tennessee-Alabama game last week, boy, I was not impressed with Tennessee. They have the early lead. I think Alabama kind of came out slow, and Tennessee had an opportunity to go back-to-back beating Alabama, and they just couldn't sustain it. I'm really not pleased with what I saw. So I am taking Kentucky. I'm taking the points. They're at home, and a lot of it has to do, I'm not pleased with what I saw with Tennessee last week. Kentucky is coming off of a bye. Tennessee, yes, they have five wins, but two of their SEC wins, Texas A&M, South Carolina, not really that big of a deal. And Kentucky has looked good. They started off the season well. I think people were really high on Kentucky. Then they lost to Georgia, and obviously no one's going to be upset with that. And then they lost to Missouri, but I don't think that Missouri loss is as bad as people want to say. Missouri's a pretty decent team. So give me Kentucky at home catching points, coming off a bye, while Tennessee played, at this point, their biggest game of the season. I got to believe there's a certain letdown factor, just the physical factor of playing Nick Saban's team. Now there's the letdown factor of losing that game. I'm taking Kentucky with the points.
Only about 60 seconds left here, Aaron, but any other games you want to make sure that you get out there you really liked on the card?
Well, there's a couple of them, Stormy. I think Duke versus Louisville is another good one to look at. I'm taking Louisville in this situation. And Louisville, after they had the big Notre Dame win, they lose the next week to Pittsburgh. And that's certainly let down situation. They lose to Pittsburgh, going to Pittsburgh. Not a great team, but still traveling to Pittsburgh was a tough one. Now they have a week off, and they welcome in Duke. And Duke last week lost to Florida State, and Florida State is obviously a physical team. That was a big opportunity for Duke that they didn't get a chance to pull off that upset. And we don't know what's happening with Riley Leonard and his ankle. And if there's any doubt about Riley Leonard, boy, I can't take Duke. So I like Louisville in this home situation.
Boy, and we saw right before our eyes how different that team looks with him in the lineup and with him out. Thanks so much, Aaron. You're awesome.
Thank you very much.
Great job, Aaron. Thank you.
Aaron Moore, also, again, contributing to the College Basketball Betting Guide as well. He is all over it. Appreciate his time here on VSiN. We are wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line when we return.